Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Addiction Unlimited podcast, where you get to learn everything you want to know about addiction and recovery. I'm your host, Angela Pugh, co-founder of Kansas City Recovery, life coach, and recovering alcoholic. To learn more about me, you can listen to episode zero on your podcast app or find us on the web at addictionunlimited.com. Hello, my friend. Welcome back to another episode of the Addiction Unlimited podcast. I'm your coach, Angela Pugh. If you're listening to the Addiction Unlimited show, I'm guessing you're a fan of living a sober lifestyle, right? If you've ever thought about going to a 12-step meeting or wanted to grow your sober community to have more support and fun, this is the perfect episode to get started. And I'm telling you, this conversation is not just for all of you. I found so much value in this conversation, and it warmed my heart, taking me back to my 12-step roots. Enter Arlena Allen, the fabulous founder of Sober Life School, the host of the One Day at a Time podcast and Self-Help Junkie podcast, and a massive self-help junkie herself. I've recently gotten to know Arlena, and I was a guest on her One Day at a Time podcast, and it has been such a blast. Arlena is another high-functioning alcoholic. She left her corporate job to follow her personal development dreams, and now she's following her heart and helping others get the life they really want, working with amazing and powerful women every day. We talk about the changes in the recovery world that we've watched over decades of sobriety, what it feels like to be an old timer in this space, and the beauty of simplicity in your recovery plan. She has mastered long-term sobriety, and she's sharing all of her wisdom and humor with you. Arlena, thank you so much for coming on and doing the show with me.
Oh my God, I'm super excited. We had such a good time when you were a guest on my podcast. I was like, this is going to be awesome.
It's been kind of fun swapping episodes. I've been doing a lot of episode swaps recently, and it's been really fun just getting to know more people in our little industry. You know, we have a very niche industry, and yeah, it's fun getting to meet people. Well, why don't we start with just take a minute, tell everybody a little bit about you and what you do.
Well, what I do is I am a full-time podcaster. I'm in the space full-time, like the whole sobriety, recovery, personal development space. So I do coaching, and in that practice, I most of the time talk to women that are, you know, that want to learn how to quit drinking. But then I also work with women. It's like, well, then what? What happens after that? And it's like dealing with life challenges. Like I seem to attract a lot of like people like me, like the overachievers, the workaholics, the self-help junkies, which is why I started the second podcast called Self-Help Junkies. So it's all about, you know, picking a topic, finding out why it's important, but coming up with three action items, because that, you know, that old saying, self-knowledge avails us nothing. You know, it's all about the action. So that's kind of where I'm at today. I do a lot of writing. I'm writing a book, The 12-Step Guide for Skeptics. And listen, you and I have been in this space a long time, and we've seen lots of changes, and there's a lot of new ways to do it, which is really exciting to get sober and or handle the substance use disorders. But there's a little bit of vitriol against, like, a lot of backlash against old programs, you know, traditional. And I know that you're in the same camp that I am, that it's an amazing program. It's a take what you like, leave the rest type of thing. But there are some definite barriers to entry. So I'm writing about how people can get past the word alcoholic, or this idea that it's religious, or these ideas of powerlessness. These are ideas that tend to keep people out. So I'm writing sort of from an empathetic place, you know, how do you get past that so that you could get the magic of the transformative process that the 12-step is. So I seem to be like, you ever see those Chinese plate spinners?
Yes. Yeah. That's me. You know, I can relate very well.
I'm always spinning like 50 plates. So, but yeah, I've been sober since April 23rd of 94. So I'm coming up on 30 years, and my life has been revolved around all the ideas around how to stay sober and be of service and things like that. So,
do you feel like your length of sobriety is a major differentiator for you in the space of recovery podcasters?
I would say yes, but not necessarily in a positive way. Some of the feedback I've gotten has been like, oh, you've been sober so long, you don't remember what it was like back in the beginning, right? Or, you know, I didn't get sober with kids. Like I was sober for 8 years by the time I had kids.
Right. So yeah, because you obviously got sober really young because you are not very old to be coming up on 30 years.
What are you saying? Thank you.
Yeah, obviously to be sober. I know everybody in podcast world can't see you right now, but you're stunning. And it's hard to believe you're coming up on 30 years sober. So obviously it happened young.
And the lack of alcohol has been good for my skin. I'll tell you that.
Yes, me too. I totally agree with that for sure.
I was 25, so I'm 55. So you don't have to do the math. There it is.
Well, and I asked the question about the differentiator because it is, you know, it is kind of a thing you have to think about from a business standpoint, right? Yeah. Like what makes you different? What makes you stand out in the crowd? And I definitely have felt that. Like I remember when I was newer and I looked at old timers and sometimes I was really annoyed by old timers because I felt like they were so out of touch, right? And to be sitting in a place that I'm almost an old timer, right? Traditionally speaking, old timers 20 plus years. Mm-hmm. And or that was my understanding anyway. That might not be the golden rule for everyone, but that's how I always understood it. An old timer has been sober 20 plus years and I'm at 18 years, but I definitely have felt some of that, like you said, we've seen a lot of changes over the years. Like we've seen the industry change, recovery change, drugs of choice change, addiction has changed. It just is very different. And some people really want to push back against the old school things. And I find it fascinating, right? But the truth is, and this is probably just some of my narcissistic tendencies also, which some of them I really embrace. But the truth is, like, I've seen a lot of shit and I've been around a long time and I know a lot.
Yeah.
You know, regardless if somebody finds that relatable or not, which I think they do. I think there is some novelty in wanting to learn from people who are maybe closer in time to where you are. At the same time, ultimately, I think we all want to be led by a person who knows their shit.
Yeah.
And that's what time and experience brings.
I would agree with that. There is a lot of value in having experience. Like I've had the experience of raising children and staying sober. I've had the experience of staying happily married. I've been with my husband. I was 5 months sober when we started dating, which is... You know, there'll be some in itself. When they hit us 5 months. He had like almost 6 years sober. He's like 35 years sober now. But I had the experience of like being able to maintain a relationship. So I feel like that is a value. And plus I've had the experience of working with other women for a very long time. And I have evolved as somebody in a peer support and then now in a professional support capacity, right? I differentiate peer support from professional. There's like training matters, experience matter, like both really matter, right? And so I do have some concerns about like when I was early in my recovery and I was like sponsoring women in 12-step programs, as it turns out, I wasn't that great because I was new at it, right? I gave advice. I was emotionally invested in what they did or didn't do, whether they took my advice or not. So I wasn't as objective, but now I have a lot of experience. Like I know what it's like to raise kids and, you know, try to stay sober, like all those other career health and fitness, challenging family relationships. Like just because you get sober doesn't mean like your family just like magically gets along, right? Money issues have been a big deal in sobriety. And so I have, you know, I've seen a lot, experienced a lot, you know, so I feel like that is what I can pass on. But typically I'm passing it on from, you know, this, you know, you have to come from a place of humility. Like, I don't really know what's the best for you. This is what I've learned, and this is what has helped me. And this, I'm just being honest about what comes up for me when I hear people, and then I can offer something that I've learned from the past. And whether they decide to follow that advice or not is really, it doesn't affect me the way it used to. It used to affect right. me. It doesn't now.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you know, it doesn't really have anything to do with you. I think you're probably a lot nicer than me.
Well, I also sort of have this belief that everything happens on time. Like if somebody is not yes. ready to take action, yes. I live by this idea that there are no mistakes, there are only lessons.
Right.
And a lesson is right. repeated until it's learned. And we have evidence that something has been learned by a change in behavior. So if somebody doesn't change their behavior, then what I have come to recognize is there's an error in their thinking. There's a presupposition somewhere, a false belief, if you will, that is causing them to come to conclusions, take actions based on that false supposition, and then they experience an outcome. And this is how patterns are developed. It has nothing to do with me. Right.
Right. But you can also relate it to yourself,
for sure.
Right? Like I can look back now and I see every part of the journey. I had every part of the journey that everybody else has. Mm. I had I don't know that I had denial, but I definitely had avoidance, right? I was never in denial that I was an alcoholic. Mm. Like I was always very clear about that, but I definitely had a long period of time that I was in avoidance, mm. right? And procrastination. Like I couldn't do it. Like I didn't know how to start stopping, as simple as it was, like go to a meeting, right? Like I had some starts and stops with that. So I went through all the same phases. Mm-hmm. And you're exactly right that it's just a process, and you get where you need to be at the right time for you. You learn those lessons along the way. Enough things happen that it becomes important enough to you to really dedicate yourself and take it seriously. And that's when people get sober. But as a coach or even professionally as a practitioner, I don't have any control over somebody else's journey. Like I don't have any power on where you are in the process and where you are on the spectrum.
Right.
You know, and I think a lot of the things that people struggle with, and I really love to hear your thoughts on this too. A lot of the things I think people struggle with, like with the terminology, right? You hear a lot of this alcohol free now and that kind of stuff, right? And so like people don't want to label themselves alcoholic, and which is cool, right? I don't really care what anybody wants to call themselves. I don't want to get any shit for what I choose to call myself and the words I choose to use, right? Yeah. So you do you and I'll do me. Yeah. But people really are struggling with where they are on the spectrum. And mm-hmm. if you're struggling with that word, you're just earlier in the game. It doesn't mean you don't have a problem. It doesn't mean that abstinence is not going to be your solution, right? That probably is the solution. Yeah. You're just in a different spot on the spectrum. You're just not as far along down the line yet. Yeah. Do you agree?
Yeah. I mean, and the word is problematic for some people because of the meaning they have assigned to it.
For sure. Yeah. It's always that. Yeah.
That.
Which is why I wear it as a badge of honor, and other people are so humiliated by it. To me, this is just this is the thing that makes me cooler than everybody else. Like I love it, you know? But because that's the meaning I assign to it. Other people get all freaked out about it because of all the feelings they've attached to it, which are their own feelings.
Yeah, yeah. I got sober in a time like you did when there really wasn't anything else other than 12-step.
Yeah.
And so it was coming to grips with this word alcoholic. And this word is a paradox because it's so loaded that it creates a barrier. But if you can accept it, if you reach a point where you're like, I'm an alcoholic, then all of a sudden there is this magical thing that happens called surrender. Like you kind of let go of this old identity that you had that you probably didn't like. I didn't like anyway. I didn't like who I was. I hated who I was. Right.
Yeah.
And I had to accept the truth about myself, which was I had this condition where that if I ingest alcohol, I cannot predict what's going to happen after that. Like I had these two alter egos. It was Badass Betsy or Wimpy Wendy because I was fighting or crying once I ingested alcohol. Turns out that there was a third alter ego, Slutty Susan. Everybody loved her quite figuratively and literally. Love her. But it was like, oh my God, once I ingest alcohol, there's no off switch. It's just, as a matter of fact, it was on. More is what I experienced. And I behaved in ways that were very problematic to myself even. So it wasn't that I wasn't aware in denial that that it was a problem. I just was not convinced that I couldn't manage it. It took me 2 years to figure out once I had like this horrible night, this horrible night when I was 23. And I was like, oh my God, it was like something, and then the next morning I was like, something has to change. And then I tried to manage, I tried to moderate for 2 years. And then I was finally in that mode of surrender and decided. And then the word alcoholic was a barrier. But once I broke through that barrier, I got a sense of freedom. Because once I wasn't battling that idea, then it was like this whole new world opened up to me. And I'm glad it went down that way. I'm glad I didn't have all these other options. And they talk about the easier, softer way. There are some other ways that appear to be easier and softer. But I, truth be told, I needed a little ass kicking. I needed a little brainwashing. And
for sure, yeah.
Safety and comfort in the barriers or the parameters or the structure of 12 step, that it was so absolute. We don't take anything no matter what kind of a thing. And, I showed up at my first meeting. I hadn't had a drink for 5 months, but I was on the marijuana maintenance program. I didn't know that that's what that was called. And someone was like, yeah, you can't really count your time until you quit everything. And I was like, all right, this is what we're doing. That's, almost 30 years later, this is where we're at.
Yeah. The word alcoholic to me symbolizes the solution. I think that's another shift that's so different from how other people view it. Because I, like you, I had so much relief. Like once I was like, oh, wait, I'm an alcoholic. And I was like, oh, well, shit, now I know what to do.
Exactly.
I know where to go. I know where those people hang out. And I know there are people that can teach me how to get better. I was the same. It was just so much relief for me. It was the solution. It wasn't, it just wasn't a big issue.
For me, it was like a place to belong. Like I felt I was so lost. And then I went to my first 12-step meeting and somebody had written on a chalkboard, welcome home. And girl, I felt that to my core. I was like, oh my God,
yeah.
Really? you guys will
you hear so many, you hear so many alcoholics and addicts talk about never feeling like we fit in. This is a constant that you hear over and over, thousands of people over all the years,
millions.
Right? Everybody has this thing. I don't fit in. I never fit in anywhere. And when I walked in, what ended up being my home group was my second meeting. When I walked in that room, it was the first place I ever walked into that I felt like I belonged.
Yeah, me too.
Like I just felt like I was in the right place. These were my people.
Yeah.
They're hilarious,
so
a little
funny.
Twisted sense of humor,
laugh,
which I so
cry.
Appreciate. Yeah, but it's the first time I ever felt like I was in the right place.
Yeah, same. It did feel like home. I was like, these people are speaking my language that I didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
It was like this hidden language and they got my kind of crazy. Like they got it. Not from like a, it was an experience thing. Like they were saying things that I felt that I had never heard anybody else say. And I was like, oh my God, me too. Oh. There were so many.
Yeah.
And then there were people that were so funny. But they would make you cry. They would touch your heart. It was like this language of the heart that I was hearing from that's what it was. It was the language of the heart. And I would laugh and cry and just feel so connected and I was like, these are my people. Some of my people were crazy. So I often and I write about that in my book, right? It's not the hotbed of mental health, right? Like boundaries are required. I differentiate the steps from the fellowship, like the community, the people. Like the steps are awesome and the people can be awesome. They're the reason that I stayed But I know that they are the reason that some people leave, right? Because people get kind of hung up. They get confused that the organization, like that people in the organization are two different things. And there are people with time who say things that are not in alignment with the organization. They don't behave in a way that's in alignment with the principles, right? And because because you've been sober a long time doesn't mean you're not crazy. Like all you have to do is 100%. Watch and listen.
Yes.
So don't get hung up on what people say. Like, don't let that be the reason you leave is because somebody said something you didn't like, or there's a group. Like I've heard of 12-step groups where people walk in and they're like, Jesus Christ has to be your Lord and Savior. And they're like, nope. And they never go back to another 12-step meeting ever again, not knowing that that's not a thing.
That's just one person.
Yeah. A group.
But I think it is important too, though, to go in, like, don't have the expectation that everybody in the room is a carbon copy of each other. Like, understand, like any other group of people you walk into, it's a group of people and everybody is going to have a different way, a different belief system, a different opinion. And that's okay. We're not in there to be carbon copies of each other. You gravitate toward the people who are like you and you stay away from the people who aren't like you or that you don't like, right? Like, it's very simple to me. And I feel like so much weight gets put on 12-step programs and what's happening in there and the people in there and, oh, the men, and I don't want to go because of the men. And it's like, Jesus, I've had weirder shit happen to me at the grocery store than I've ever had happen to me at an AA meeting. You know what I mean? Like, it's not about the rooms. It's just people being people.
Yeah.
And you have to have that expectation that just because people are in those rooms and have time and have been sober a long time doesn't mean they're healthy. Mm-mm. It doesn't mean they're really living the thing and healing and practicing all the principles and all their affairs. It doesn't mean that at all. It means maybe hopefully that's their goal. But if somebody doesn't vibe with you, then set some boundaries and stay away from them. I mean, it's really simple.
Yeah, just sort of, you know, underscores the idea that, you know, the people aren't perfect, obviously. It's not even close. It's about progress, not perfection, you know, but we don't use that as an excuse to not change either, right? There was this guy in the program, he was very handsome, all the girls like, he was candy coated misery is what he was. And progress, not perfection. It's like, listen, that's not what that's for. That's not how you're supposed to use that.
That's not to co-sign your bad behavior.
Yeah. That is not an excuse. It's for people who err on the other way, who like are perfectionists and beat themselves up because they made a mistake. That's not for you, I wanted to tell him.
Sure. I love that candy-coated misery. Yeah, Jesus.
I know I've said that before and everybody goes, yeah, I know. I know.
That was an appropriate title for me for a few decades. Okay, when you were getting sober, especially as a young person, like, what was your biggest fear about getting sober?
Oh, well, listen, before I got sober, I was afraid I wasn't going to have to be able to have champagne at my wedding. And I told somebody that and they're like, oh, are you dating somebody? And I was like, no.
Right.
Maybe don't worry about
that. For me, it was champagne on New Year's for me. That was, I was like, oh my gosh, how am I going to have a New Year's Eve without champagne?
I know, right? I was like, I am never going to have fun ever again. That's what I thought. Little did I know that crazy. I would have the most fun ever in 12-step. Like this community, you know, like once you find the right people, we had so much fun. You know, I met my husband early on and I would go to young people meetings, you know, because a lot of times for most people, you know, they get sober later in life, you know, but I kind of crashed and burned early. Like I kind of fell apart early. So I was there young, but there was a lot of other young people and they became my friends, the people that I, like, we'd go to meetings together. We'd go to coffee together. We'd celebrate our milestones together. We would get together for all the 4th of July and picnics. The volleyball, right? Like softball leagues. I mean, there was so much to do. I had to like, you know, have like start scaling back. I mean, it was just, there was just like a ridiculous amount of fun thing. Hiking group. I mean, there's, have you ever heard of the Phoenix organization?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So they're a sober organization. They're not 12 step oriented, but their whole thing is about, you know, sober group activities, and it's free. So, I mean, like yeah. The things I was worried about, turns out it was a non-starter. It was nothing to worry about. That's what I was worried about.
It sounds like you really embraced a new lifestyle.
Well, I mean, out of necessity, because truth be told, it's like I had nobody left. By the time I was 25 years old, my boyfriend didn't want to have anything to do with me. My girlfriends didn't want to have anything to do with me. I was hanging on by a thread with my family. There was nobody else. I was one of those people that I just kind of burned through all my relationships. I did not have good relationships with women because I didn't have a good relationship with my mom. I didn't know, you know, all my validation came from men. So I decorated the outside, and the girls I was hanging out with, they were just like my wingmans, so we could go to bars and stuff because I was on the hunt for a man. I thought, you know, it's funny, as I thought two things I thought were going to save me. I thought it was love or money. And I love and money. Let's be clear. I thought a man was going to save me. And it turns out I was off just a little bit. It was love that saved me, but it came from the women. Right. And yeah, right. I didn't know that at first, right? I was all so externally focused that I didn't know that I have anything of worth or value on the inside. And that's what the women of the program gave me. They helped me to discover my worth as a human without doing, right? I was very performance-based, very externally, you know what I mean? So it was...
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So I didn't listen. I didn't have anybody left when I got sober. So I was so grateful. I mean, I was out in the cold, and these two guys sort of Eskimoed me into the rooms, you know, to my customers. I was in a sales position. And these two guys are both sober, Mitch and Randy. And one was kind of breaking down the concepts of 12 steps. And Mitch took me to my very first meeting. And I was so grateful, like we were talking about those first meetings when they welcome the newcomer and they, you know, wrote welcome home, and they started telling their stories, things that I felt that I didn't know how to articulate. They were, oh my God. So I was home, and I was grateful for all of that.
Yeah. It's such a good time thinking back on the early days.
It was fun. You know, I was broke. And I was working a lot, so I was tired. But there was a lot of magic happening in those early days, because that's when I was changing. There's something about evolving and making progress that leads to a certain satisfaction and contentment and fulfillment. And I was growing in leaps and bounds in those days. I was learning to set boundaries. I was learning to take personal responsibility for my feelings. I was learning how to take my power back. I was just learning so much, like learning I could actually ask for help, and then learning how to listen for the answer, like developing this higher power concept. It was exciting times. Everything was so new.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I totally agree. And the simplicity of it, right? Like you said earlier, the simplicity of the structure of the program. Like I have found in my life now, after many decades of life and many mistakes in life, yes, when I look back, some of the most incredible periods of my life were rebuilding periods because I simplified so much, right? Like early sobriety, I had one freaking goal. I was tunnel visioned on one thing, and that was not drinking, period. Mm-hmm. Whatever that took, that's what I was doing. And then later, another point of time I always think about is I had a financial rock bottom a couple of years into sobriety. Mm-hmm. And again, in a position of just simplifying, like I had to cut my life down to bare bones, and I had one focus, and that was just digging my way out of this financial hole that I had gotten into. I'd lost a business and owed a lot of money. But it just, the simplicity of those times, like those were some of my most enjoyable times of my life because it was just simple.
Yeah. We do have a tendency to overcomplicate things.
Oh my gosh, for sure.
I love me a good
this crazy little brain of mine. Okay, so when did you decide, at what point did you decide that you wanted recovery to be your career?
Well, I came from Silicon Valley in the, you know, San Jose, California Bay Area, and I was in high tech for 10 years. So I did high tech sales and I knew that I was not in alignment with my authenticity, with like who I really was. Right. And I had been wanting to get out. I was like, God did not put me on this planet to sell software. You know, it was fun having like a fancy title and a big income and, you know, work trips and all that. But it was very, it was out of alignment with who I really was, because my heart wanted to be of service and to share all the things that I had been learning over the decades that I had been sober. Right. And, so it was kind of a funny story. Actually, this is where like I got super involved and like obsessed with like the laws of attraction. I was like, what is this thing? Like The Secret came out like in 2007 or 2008. Yeah. I was really interested by it. It's really just ideas about universal law, like karma or gravity. Like there are laws, and things that are laws, guarantees that bring me comfort. So I started playing with this. So anyway, in 2020, I started getting a coaching certification. My husband was like, enough is enough. You've been talking about this for so long. You need to just do it. So he made me sit down and fill out the application and pay the money. I was like, oh my God, you know, to eat all this money to get a coaching certification. So he was like, do it. You've been talking about it too long. This is what you're meant to do. Do it. So I was getting that done. Meanwhile, my work laptop password, this is where the law of attraction comes in, because what you think about, you bring about it. The password was new job 2020 on my work laptop, right? New job 2020. I was thinking about coaching. And then COVID hits, right? And I'm selling VPN, virtualized private networks, at the enterprise level. And when it hit, like the Pac Northwest, which was my territory, was like a hotspot. So every account I was managing had to make a purchase. Like it was insane. I did like 400 quotes in like 2 weeks where that's all I did the entire previous year, right? I hit my annual number by about March or April. So wow. It was crazy. And the company did so good. It got acquired. And after it got acquired, they laid off the entire inside sales team, which I was a part of. So they gave me a golden parachute. It was amazing. It was amazing. And it happened in December of 2020. I had 2 years worth of salary in the bank. I just completed my coaching certification. And I was like, that was amazing. That was like a lot. Yeah. And so that's what I've been doing ever since. Like I had been doing the podcast since 2016, trying to help people. Really, the whole purpose of that podcast is to help alleviate unnecessary suffering through the lens of addiction recovery. And, but yeah, so that's what I've been doing ever since. And this feels like it's in alignment with who I really am, you know, and really kind of the next step has been the Self-Help Junkie podcast. Cause after you get sober, like after I got sober, I became obsessed with all the help self stuff. I learned these ideas, like if you change your mind, you can change your life. And I was searching back into my child for like, where did all the wounds happen? Where did my mother wounds, money wounds, self-esteem, like where did all that, what were the roots to that? And so the self-help path, I've just been obsessed with it. I can't believe it took me this long to figure out I needed to do this podcast. But because, you know, that idea that self-knowledge avails us nothing. It was like I got stuck in this loop of consuming information and kind of getting that dopamine hit and like kind of future tripping with like, oh, this, how things could be different. But the podcast is actually about identifying a topic, why it's important, and then three action items. Like how do you actually apply it to your life? And then twice monthly, there's a meeting where people can come and ask questions about it or get ideas or just connect with other people that are also sort of the overachiever, self-help junkie type people who love to talk about this kind of information. So it's been it's been amazing. It's been a lot of fun.
Well, you highlighted a really important thing in there too, in the like continuing to consume, right? And this, and people get stuck here in just the consumption of information. Yeah. Information will not change your life. Action changes your life. So, and I'm sure you see this a lot too, right? Because we're all kind of the same, but people will just bounce from one thing to another, right? It's like the dry January thing. And then it's this other podcaster person has this thing, and then this membership and these meetings and this worksheet and this challenge. And, you know, like everybody just bounces from thing to thing, thinking the thing is going to be what changes. And it's like, no, you can continue consuming information and stay in analysis paralysis forever. Yeah. If that's what you're dedicated to, right? Like at some point you've got to take real action and make actual changes in your life.
Yeah. And this is kind of like the right information applied at the right time and in the right way is what affects change. And I'm all about cause and effect. You know, let me say spirituality, but I am a science girl at heart because there are times,
yes, me too.
Yeah, you know, there are times when I just don't have faith, you know, and I have doubts. And when I don't have faith, I have science, right? I have evidence that I can rely on that if I take these actions, I will get these results, that it's impersonal. Like I don't need to be, you know, I like this idea of science being impersonal because then it sort of alleviates a lot of shame for me. Right. In certain areas, like I had shame around money. I had shame around my ability to perform. You know, sales was all performance based. Right.
Yeah.
And my self-esteem or my self-worth for like a decade. Well, listen, to be honest, my whole life has been tied to my ability to produce and perform. And so this is, you know, if I take these actions, I get these results. But even like on the spiritual tip, now I'm all about detachment and creating for the sake of that being the thing that brings me joy. Like I'm following the internal compass now, like what actually brings me joy. But I really did want to break these old patterns. I did get lost in this consuming information. And for me, like you were talking about simplicity, like a lot of this is about scaling back the information. Like I've been doing the Julia Cameron, The Artist Way, morning pages. And in there, she suggests like not reading books, but the book is like 30 years old, but she's like, don't read books for a week. And I was like, wow, if I translated that to today, where it'd be like, don't listen to a single podcast or audio book for a week. It's like my little heart skips a beat. Like what? Like I don't want to miss out on anything, or I don't want to be with myself. I'd rather listen to a podcast or
give me more information.
Yeah. So this is almost like an overeaters, like an eating disorder. It's like a consuming, because I do need to constantly, like good information is like push-ups for my brain, right? Like I'm fighting against something called the default mode network. It's like my neurology developed in a certain way from like childhood that involved trauma and neglect and some stuff. So my brain is sort of wired a certain way. So I do find it important to consume positive information because that leads me to a healthier place. Like I wouldn't expect to go to the gym once and stay in shape forever, eat a salad and be thin the rest of my life, right? But it's a way of managing it so that it's not, that's not the end goal, is to consume, find information that gives me the dopamine hit. The end goal is to find the action item in the information that I'm consuming. And I use SMART goals, the specific, measurable, actionable, reasonable, and time bound. If it's not on my calendar, it doesn't happen. So when I consume information, it's with the ear of what is the action and how am I going to apply it to my life? How am I going to squeeze it onto the calendar? You know?
Right.
So yeah, I'm currently obsessed with that.
I love that. I'm a law of attraction person too. It's like one of my favorite things in the world. Yeah. It's such an incredible belief system, and love it. Okay. Final question, favorite question. What is your favorite thing about being a sober person?
I think it gave me my purpose. It helped me be authentically who I am, which has led me to my purpose. You know, I have like this overarching purpose. If I want to be of service, I want to be useful, you know, and I got this prayer from Oprah. It was, take all that I am, all that I hope to be, and use it for a purpose greater than myself. Right. And that feels, it's like my life has a rudder. I was so lost before. And now my life has a rudder. I have purpose. It has meaning. And man, I can't imagine not having had that. I'm so grateful for it.
Yeah, I love that. I totally agree. So, so, so good. And who would have thought that really it would have led us to our purpose? Because that was truly what it was for me too. It really showed me what it, at first, like my rock bottom moment, gave me the insight that there must be something else I'm meant for, because I was trying my best to die or destroy myself and destroy my life. And it just wasn't happening, right? So I knew, I was like, wow, I guess there must be something else I'm meant to do. And then eventually, you know, I definitely understood that this was my path and certainly what I was created for. And yeah, unbelievable. All of that, all of that, just being an alcoholic. Oh,
yeah, I see it. You are doing what you were meant to do. Oh, shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Good, good stuff. Arlena, thank you again for coming on, and tell everybody the best way to find you. And just so you guys know, I will link it all in the show notes too.
Yeah. So I would say you can find me on Instagram, Self-Help Junkie Podcast. That is like, I'm obsessed with it. So I'm spending the majority of my time there. I do have a website, Sober Life School. That's sort of like the hub. It has my, all my sobriety stuff on there, the podcast, like there's a bunch of free resources. I wrote a guide, how to quit drinking, 30 tips for your first 30 days that you can just download for free. So there's a lot of resources there, but, I am obsessed with the self-help junkie stuff. Like this, I feel like, okay, this is my purpose.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. So good to see you.
You've reached the end of another great episode of the Addiction Unlimited podcast. Candid and honest conversation about addiction and recovery. Be sure to visit us at addictionunlimited.com to join the conversation and access show notes and links to everything we talked about. Love this episode? Please take 30 seconds to subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes to help us improve and give you the information you want. Thanks for listening. See you next week.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.